On this episode of Comedy Rewind, how did Hugh Grant bumble and stutter his way into a rom-com archetype with four weddings and a funeral? How have the concepts of marriage changed since 1994? Is Andy McDowell's character just a terrible person? All of this and more on Comedy Rewind.
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 Push rewind.
I thought this was a comedy show.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Comedy Rewind. We are powered by Audio Technica as we rewatch the great comedies of the 1990s. I'm your host, Jono Peck, and joining me, bouncing from one wedding to the next, maybe a funeral here and there, it is Salim the Dream Abraham. How you going? Making your triumphant return to podcasting.
My triumphant return, that's right. Hey, mates. I'm really good. How are you?
Really good. It's, you know, I'm doing as well as anyone probably could in such interesting times.
Yeah. I've been going to the pub quite often lately, if I'm being very honest with you, mate.
Oh, you know what? Every time I see someone drinking like a pint on TV of tap, you know, beer on tap, I'm just like, that's what I want right now because it's the one thing I can't have. And I had a couple just before our recent lockdown. And I reckon it was the first ones I'd had since like January or something. I didn't take advantage of the freedom while I had it, and now I just want it. So enjoy it.
Which way are you swinging during lockdown? Are you adopting healthy habits and like losing a ton of weight and all of this stuff, or are you just like putting on those COVID kilos?
I'm probably just right down the middle. Like, we went into a bit of a health kick when the pandemic first started, which has probably set us up pretty good to be in the habit of like eating lots of fruit and not snacking heaps and that kind of thing. But, you know, you go up and down where you just feel like you need to have dessert now and then or get some snacks now and then to make yourself feel better, you know, eat the sadness away.
I'm right there with you. I'm king of the yo-yo, mate. I'll have like the first 8 hours of my day are the healthiest, and then I'll have 10 beers. And just write off all the really positive things that I've just done at the start of my day. So I'm right there with you, mate. I totally understand what that feels like.
That's it. But I mean, we are here to talk about Four Weddings and a Funeral. It's a movie that I had never seen before. This is the first time in Comedy Rewind history that I'm coming into a movie fresh with no, you know, background, personal experience with it at all. But it was a movie that you wanted to talk about. Is there anything in particular that drew you to this one from the list of films that I presented?
I've seen this film once before, and it was when I was probably 22, so it was quite a while after it came out. I just love this film. I just think this is such a great, smart, charming, funny little film. And on that list of movies that you gave me, mate, this one just stood out as something that I know I'd love to watch again. What was your thought about it after your first watch?
It was good. Yeah, it was good. Like you said, really, I think it's really clever. It's understated. Like, there's no real like slapstick stuff going on, really. It's just all in the dialogue and just very British. Like, it's just that dry kind of wit, and it's you know, we all know Hugh Grant and this Hugh Grant type, so it's interesting. You know, I like to go back and see the origins of different things, and whether it's video games and seeing like the first in the series, or like I've been watching Twin Peaks recently, which I was telling you about because I know it's such a big influence on like current TV and a lot of different entertainment. And to go back and see, this is the first time that Hugh Grant was Hugh Grant as we became to know him. It's quite interesting and quite cool.
It is. Yeah, it is. He definitely, and I've been thinking about this a lot since I watched it again, he definitely stays the same, obviously, throughout basically the rest of his career in terms of the role he plays and how he plays them. And it's always this combination of traits, which kind of, frankly, you just think is so contrived to be, like, he is quite handsome, but he's also elegant, and then plays often these characters who seem to lack confidence. It's sort of this combination of traits that I just don't think is terribly realistic, but And you know, you ask about my memories of this film. I can only think of my memories of Hugh Grant because I was 4 when this came out. And I think when I was probably like 6 or 7 or 8, like, and he's really starting to hit his stride. And, you know, I think in 97 is Notting Hill, if I'm not mistaken. And it's like around that time, he's like the Brad Pitt from England. He's like England's answer to Brad Pitt, basically. Like, I didn't know too many things, but I knew my mum and my sisters loved Hugh Grant. So
yeah, I used to work with my dad as well. That's not who I'm talking about, but this person, after a few drinks, they kept going like, "Your dad looks just like Hugh Grant," and they would pull up photos of Hugh Grant and be like, "Look at him," and I'm like, "Yeah, I can't really see it, but okay." He definitely had maybe that kind of like floppy hairstyle in the 90s, maybe. I can see a bit of that, but yeah, it's definitely interesting watching this, knowing that it was going to be the character type that he would play for the rest of his career. And yeah, you're right, like, he's devastatingly handsome in this movie. Like, he's just ridiculously handsome. And I think the whole Britishness, or like the whole, like, what it means to be British, and like the way that they look at their celebrities, I think he kind of had to be that kind of bumbling, insecure kind of character type, because otherwise he would just be like too perfect and they would reject him in the way that, you know, I just think the English don't accept the pomp and circumstance and like the glamour of Hollywood the way that Americans might. Does that make sense?
It does, and I think I had an interesting thought about Andie MacDowell, because I think that she did Groundhog Day the year before this, and she is fantastic with Bill Murray. I think that she has no chemistry with Hugh Grant after watching this film again, but thinking about like those two guys, and what's different about them is that, you know, Groundhog Day, Bill Murray's just so like high energy, not high energy, but it's just like, it's all one-liners. Everything he says is just so dry. It's so funny. There's like a joke every few seconds.
Yeah. He knows who he is.
And there's so much more visual gag there. And she in that film is more at odds with him. Like,
she resists him. She's constantly
rejecting him, totally resists him. In this film, and it's difficult because you see it in across Four Weddings, a Funeral, and arguably A Shopping Date, that you don't see the evolutionary steps in how they actually kind of fall in love, really. It just sort of happens, and then external circumstances disrupt that union from happening until you get to the final moment when all of a sudden it all sort of falls into place. But you don't really see her be able to be to challenge him, or to be really like anything other than almost compliant, I guess, the whole sort of journey through it, if that makes sense. I think that's my only real big gripe with this film, is just that you don't really see it from her side.
Yeah, I definitely have a bit to say about Andie MacDowell, and we'll save that for a bit later, because okay, right. I think you've touched on a couple important things there. But I'm curious, do you relate to Hugh Grant? I know you're often sleeping through things like he is in this movie, but like in terms of like, you know, going to weddings and like it just like with the same group of people, like, have you been through that phase of life yet?
No. Like, I mean, definitely been to weddings, definitely sleep through a lot of crap. I drew a different parallel in that I think I said earlier, I turned 30 in like 35 days. Totally single and very happy with that in my life, but like 30 is such a milestone where it's like the clock's not ticking. I don't know, I don't feel pressure, but it's like I don't have the 10 years that I just had either. And so it was just kind of interesting to see all of these characters on screen all kind of really at certain points in the film talk through how they feel about their own sort of singledom and how they feel about relationships and weddings and marriage and all of that stuff. It really gets explored in different ways through these characters, and I'm sort of sitting there saying, yeah, I'm a little bit of this, I'm a little bit of that. The sleeping in thing, mate, that's a good pick up on your part.
I know you.
Too well.
So apparently the inspiration for this movie came when Richard Curtis, the writer, he was flipping through some old diaries and realized that he'd been to 72 weddings in 10 years.
Oh my goodness.
Which, I mean, I feel like I've been to a lot of weddings. Like I had some recent years, I guess I was just that age where it was like 5 weddings a year or like 4 weddings a year. And I'm at the point now, I'm 33 in a few months, and it's harder to think of friends that aren't married now. It's just like become kind of the circle that I'm in, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was interesting watching this movie of these people who, you know, they all go to the weddings together. They're all single, and apart from the gay couple, and like things just never seem to work out for them. And it makes me think back to, for me, that was really, I guess, like 10 years ago for me. And I think that most people can probably relate to that theme in the film.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I think we'll talk about it, I guess, as we start really breaking down the film a bit more. It really does. It feels like it's like super pro marriage, basically the whole film, because it seems to be what everyone's driving desire is in this film until you kind of get to the last. It's really only until you get sort of to the final post film montage of like images of wedding photos and other things. And you start to see, okay, no, not quite everyone gets married, but everyone somehow finds happiness. And that's what's really important. Mate, where should we start?
Let's look at, I've got a couple of tidbits I want to throw in there, and then we'll get into some of the categories. So we've talked a little bit about Hugh Grant, and you know, you've just said that you're about to turn 30. He was 32 years old and claimed to be on the brink of giving up acting before he got this role. So think about that. You know, you think if you're not sure about how you feel about having 10 years behind you, like this guy, everything we know about him happened after the age of 32. So I think that maybe that's a bit encouraging, or I hope that's encouraging to you, Dream. The movie was shot for £2.8 million. I don't know how that translates, but it did make $245 million USD at the box office. So that's quite a markup.
That's huge. Yeah, that's huge.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I mentioned Richard Curtis, the writer, before. Do you know other movies he's worked on? Because if you can think of any British rom-com, like name any.
Notting Hill. Has he done Notting Hill?
He did Notting Hill. Name another one.
to what decade are we talking about, though? Like what year did he basically
from that movie working? From that movie up until now, basically.
Love Actually, he did that.
He did Love Actually.
God, I'm trying to think of more. It's weird because Hugh Grant started working in America. That's the only British rom-coms I can think of.
Yeah.
Hugh Grant films. Well,
so Bridget Jones's Diary, About Time, which came out, 5 or 6 years ago with Rachel McAdams and Dom Gleason.
I love that film.
Yeah, that's a great really film. Great movie. Yeah. And then Yesterday, the Beatles-themed movie that came out last year, I think. I skipped that one, but I just added it to my Amazon list. I heard it wasn't the best, but I'm curious anyway.
Yeah. Interesting premise.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the whole thing is how interesting the premise is, that, and that's really the only reason I want to watch it. But yeah, so shout out to Richard Curtis for an amazing run of British rom-coms. He knows what he's doing. He knows that Hugh Grant is his, I guess, somewhat of a meal ticket for him, or vice versa, because they've worked together quite a bit over the years. Now, Rotten Tomatoes, we're going to look at the score here, Dream. Have you got any guesses how popular this movie is
I didn't cheat. I was just doing some research.
Let's imagine that you didn't see it, and I'll join you on this one for the first time ever. Another first. Yeah. If you didn't know what it was, what would you have guessed? Because I probably would have guessed around about an 80, I think.
Yeah, I would have gone, well, it's kind of hard, but I probably would have been around 85, assuming that this was beloved by everyone.
Mm. And it's a 96, which is very, very high. Like, I think there might only be one or two other movies that have been that high on this podcast. So, it's kind of surprising, I think, just because it's very British. I feel like there would have been people who didn't quite get the humor, but apparently not. And I think even Hugh Grant was really surprised. Like, a few of the people that worked on this did not think it was going to be very good or very popular. And it obviously made a ton of money and people liked it. So it's a bit of a double whammy.
It's hard to think about how people would have received this film, because it feels like it is obviously very British, but it's also taken so many jabs at Americans. And there's a real like... It's almost like a punching down of Americans in this film at so many different points. It's tough to sort of imagine how that would have gone down with audiences. I think unless you're American, you probably think it's pretty funny. The humor as well is so, it's so commonplace now that it's hard to, I guess, think about how people couldn't have got that or couldn't have laughed, because I was laughing constantly.
Yeah, me too. It's one of those movies that it was just, you had to pay attention because there was just jokes constantly.
Yeah.
But like I said, it never had any like Dumb and Dumber, Happy Gilmore, like these like fall out of your chair kind of moments. But it's just frequently clever and humorous, I guess I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Which maybe that was a change of pace in 1994 amongst the, you know, all the Jim Carrey movies that came out that year.
you mentioned sort of the visual gags aren't there, but they are sort of there, but understated is the word you used as well. I think it's so correct. Mm. Like it's the signing between Charles and his brother David, you know, where he just constantly mistranslates what his brother's saying. Yeah. It's like even, it's the second wedding, Lydia and... the husband's name, I forget, Bernard, and they're having sex in the room upstairs, and you see Hugh Grant like slowly trying to leave, and he opens the door and goes through, and you think he's left the room, and then you find out he's just gone into like a little he's gone into like this little ensuite sink or something, like a little thing,
like kitchenette or something.
It just constantly builds on that, on just like the last funny thing to the next funny. It's really clever. Anyway, I'm railroading. We'll move on to it.
That's okay. We'll move on to the number one song when For Weddings and a Funeral released in Australia. You're not going to guess this, Dream. So it was Ace of Base, The Sign. And then in the UK, it was appropriately Come On You Reds, a song recorded by the 1994 Manchester United football squad.
What? What?
Written and produced by the rock group Status Quo.
It's a football song.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
I haven't listened to it, but I assume it's some kind of football chant. I don't know.
I didn't know that could happen.
Maybe Manchester United just won something. And anyway, I'm sure that there would be football fans out there that would know the reason that went number one, but
someone on Twitter could explain it to us.
Yeah. What Have You Done For Me Lately? So this movie is full of kind of people that you sort of recognize because they're British. And unless you're probably really big into British film and TV, you're not going to really know or care about most of them. So I'm not going to spend like heaps of time on this. We've got David Haig, who's been in Downton Abbey. And Rowan Atkinson's pretty much the only like big name aside from Hugh Grant. Andy McDowell. And Johnny English Strikes Again was his most recent film. I don't know if you've seen the Johnny English movies, but they're very popular with my dad and my nephew and niece. So that's a tick for them.
Okay. No, I haven't seen them, mate. No, I don't know that that's exactly a glowing recommendation either.
Oh, I think my dad's got a good sense of humor.
Oh, okay.
He did introduce me to Rowan Atkinson through like Blackadder and Mr. Bean and that kind of thing. So, big Blackadder guy. John Hannah, who plays this, you know, the chap who loses his beloved Gareth in this film. I can't remember the character's name, but I recognized him from The Mummy but he has recently been on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so he's still kicking along. And pretty much everyone in this movie is still working. Like, they're all really successful. They're just not big names. And Andie MacDowell, even, like, I couldn't tell you anything she's been in recently, could you?
She's 62 years old now. And I couldn't say anything either. Yeah, I'm trying to think of other films seen her in. Did you recognize the guy, I think his name is Barry the Boar? In The First Wedding, he's like trying to get Hugh to stay out and have drinks with him while Carrie's trying to get him to go upstairs.
Yeah, right. That guy's in...
He's in Game of Thrones, and was like killing me to work out how I recognize. Anyway.
Oh, that's great. That was a good scene.
That was hilarious. Yeah.
We are now at the point where we ask each other, what's the most 90s moment of this movie? And is there anything more 90s than the wedding dresses?
I love that in the first is Scarlett's like, she looks beautiful, and then Fiona's like, you must be blind, Scarlett, she looks like a big meringue. Like, they're so puffy, aren't they?
Yeah, it was in the wake of the whole Princess Diana thing, which I feel like that was the 80s, but I guess the trend lasted into 1994 at least. At least, definitely in England at least.
Yeah, it's definitely there. I think, I didn't want to really dwell on like the fashion, just because it is, you must be sick of talking about it on all of these podcasts, by the way, always having to refer to 90s fashion. So I don't want to bore you too much. But there wasn't too much that actually looked too out of place to me. And I think it's because so much of this film is set in like, in sort of really historic sort of British settings. And it's also so informed by like history and their culture, which is quite obviously, you know, very old. So even like the wedding, the Scottish wedding, Carrie's wedding, it's like, you can't really, there's not too much there that really sticks out, you know, even now. I thought that there's like a moment where Fiona's sitting at a table, I think in the second wedding, and the old lady next to her is like, are you married? She's like, no. And she's like, are you a lesbian? I think that like the treatment of gay characters and sort of homosexuality in general in this film is so, like, that sticks out, not as bad, but just like, I'm assuming you couldn't have overtly... you know, not overtly gay characters, but you couldn't portray gay characters the way you can now. And you see that with Matthew and with his partner who dies. It is Gareth. Yeah, it's like you never see them kiss. Not once.
Yeah.
You know, you see sort of a few, you know, meaningful gestures, but even at the funeral, they say he's good friend, Matthew, as they announce Matthew to come up. So...
Yeah, interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's... And again, I think it does it as respectfully as I guess they could at the time, but it's definitely... I don't know. It was weird. It felt like it was like...
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, kind of, because it's like the fact that they are two of the main characters in itself would have been a pretty big thing, I think. And that it's also done in a way like... It's understated. It's not like, and here are my two gay friends and how funny are they? And one of them is the man of the relationship and this one's the woman of the relationship. It's not like a big kind of like the Birdcage ignorant style kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. which is super, super stereotypical, I guess, of what films might have done at the time. Like you said, like The Birdcage is a great example of that, where there's a feminine and a masculine within the relationship when that's just silly. And you're right, like the fact that you have those characters in the first place is you just,
it was probably progressive at
normal
the time.
Real character. Yeah, exactly. It's like it's not a slight against the film. It's just the how do they get this film out, how do they get this film made without pissing off people, blah 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 at the time. So anyway, I thought that was pretty goddamn 90s. What else did I have?
Anything else? I had something, and tell me what you think of this.
All right.
Some very, very, very short engagements in this movie. And I don't know if it's a 90s thing, but the fact that it stands out so much makes me think it had to have just been a of-the-time thing. Because you have the couple you mentioned before, Bernard and
Lydia. What's the woman? Yeah, 3 months.
Yeah, 3 months. That's three months from hooking up. That's not a 3 month engagement unless they were engaged instantly.
Did you? So what I don't think the film ever confirms this. Yeah, like I think that's what's inferred. He knocked her up at the first wedding, but they don't really.
But then they're still getting around like a couple of school kids. They're like all over each other still.
Well, mate, what happens in the bedroom is between them two and God, mate, not me.
And Hugh Grant's character, because he was in there with them.
You would also expect to see like a little bit of a bump, like at 3 months, right? I'm not an expert.
What's that? 12 weeks? Not necessarily.
Not really. Oh, okay, so maybe it's inferred.
Especially not with a cleverly like designed dress or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe that's the implication. That's what I assume straight away. I'm like, oh, he's knocked her up. But they do, and they are obviously quite mad about each other, which I think is hilarious, given that the first thing she said to him was, "Don't be silly, Bernard. I'm not that desperate."
Yeah. But then even the other engagements that are portrayed aren't necessarily... Like, Hugh Grant's character, Charles, goes from thinking... What's the name of his fiancée at that point?
It's Henrietta Duckface.
Yeah, Hen. He calls her Hen, and he says, like... He acts like she is, like, the nightmare ex-girlfriend or something, in some senses, even though people... And she kind of is like, she's crying all over him, and he's like, ugh.
"The way
should I miss something?"
Yeah, I think it's hilarious that he was just sat at a table with all of his ex girlfriends. Like that's one of the funniest things I think in this film. Like such a nightmare situation. But she like the way she's crying over the loss of their relationship,
the breakup,
and then almost like his future. And his soul, I guess. Like, she is really taking that to heart. Yeah. I also find it funny that she, like... Not funny, but it's, like, it's interesting that they sort of resolve it with she found someone in the third wedding and she's got that guy now. And so she's kind of moving on, and maybe he can move on. And then, you know, he sweeps her off her feet, obviously, in the following 10 months to get engaged. So, yeah.
Yeah, so again, they were broken up. He didn't seem interested in her at all because he was so focused on other women, not just Andy McDowell's character, but he just didn't seem interested in her at all. And then in the gap that we don't see, which is only, I think you said 10 months, right?
It's 10 months, yeah.
They must have started dating again, and they got engaged and married within 10 months, like... Or they didn't quite get married, but they had a wedding. And it's like, okay, another really short engagement. I don't know. It just seems like compared to today, the trend with most people is to be engaged for like a couple of years. Or like, let's save up money and have the perfect wedding and we'll have, you know, everything that we want. And we won't even start planning it for like a year.
Yeah, the cost of living back then, a lot lower than it is now. I think probably, you know, we look like you're saying, we've probably moved on a little bit and we're willing to take our time a bit more as a society, as people going into these things. But I didn't find that too strange. I think what I took from that was that these are just people who are all desperately trying to get married or desperately find the one. And again, you get it in the third wedding where like, Gareth is encouraging everyone to go out and find the person, and you learn that Fiona's, you know, got an unrequited love with Charles, and Scarlett's kind of full on, and Tom the tall,
the rich
by the
guy.
Way, the seventh richest guy in in Britain, I think that Branson fella's doing really well or something,
terribly well.
Like all of them are, and you know Tom says, you know, I don't want the thunderbolt, I just want to find someone who I find really pleasing, like find really happy,
doesn't think I'm disgusting,
whatever. Yeah, doesn't vomit at the side of me, whatever he says. Yeah. And you see like how they think about this stuff. But ultimately, it's it's all going to boil down to just getting married. I think that's what the clock is. It's like 10 months is just like, it's almost like there's a deadline before 35. Like if you don't do it now, it's never going to happen. And then that's even worse than going into like a miserable relationship. By the way, what's Tom's form marrying a cousin? What'd you think of that?
I thought it was unusual. I thought it was very interesting. Yeah. I know it's probably fine as far as like biology, like when they're that distant, but it's still a little unusual. Yes.
If you are if you're in the top 7 richest families in the UK, it should not be that hard.
No, you're right.
It really shouldn't.
Yeah. Maybe he was looking for the real deal though, you know? Anyway, I think we might have stumbled into something as we've been talking. Like maybe it's the fact that getting married was such a big deal. Like that's maybe very 90s compared to now where there's a bit more, you know, the cultural perspective has changed where it's like, you know, it's okay to be by yourself and like, it's okay to be with someone for a really long time and you don't have to get married. Like I guess that would be what the culture of today says about relationships, whether you believe, like I'm obviously, I had a 5-month engagement, so I'm not one to talk, but like I'm really big on like how important marriage can be. But that, I wouldn't say that my perspective is what the general societal norm would be now.
Yeah, no, look, I think you're right for sure. And marriage has changed, obviously, you know, now gay marriage is across the UK, here in Australia, in the US and other parts of the world now as well, but like, and parts of Europe. The film doesn't think you should get married, I don't think, because at the end, Charles and Carrie aren't married when they have that kid. And I think it's a bit subtle, but it's because you don't see their wedding photos. I think that's the sign to say they didn't get married.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure that's sort of the meaning behind not seeing their wedding photos with everyone else's. Mm-hmm. You just see a photo of them and a kid and you're like, oh, okay. So I think the film's not saying you need to get married, but these characters all desperately think they do.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, so those are bitter dots, but yeah, it's. I think you're right. Marriage is definitely a whole other thing now. How do you find it, by the way, mate? What's your views on it? Would you recommend it to me? I'm not quite sold.
No, I have nothing but good things to say about it. And weddings, man. Like, I was going to be facetious and say do it just for the wedding because weddings are awesome, but I shouldn't say that. Don't rush into anything.
I'll just go to other people's weddings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I'm totally cool with that, mate.
You get to have more fun at other people's weddings, probably, but no.
And I don't have to spend 50 to 100 grand either. Yeah, that's nice.
Ours was a fraction of that, and we had a great time. But you know, people want what they want.
Well, mate, if it happens to me, you're the wedding planner, then, all right? Let's keep it.
I'll tell you how to. Cut some costs and no one will know.
Beautiful, thank you.
I'm thrifty. You touched on one of the 90s things I wanted to throw out there was the reference to Richard Branson doing terribly well. I did some research and found that just before this, he had sold Virgin to EMI, the record label, for £500 million. So yeah, doing pretty well.
Smashed it. £500 million. Oh my
Most
goodness.
Iconic scene, Salim. This was a tough one for me because I didn't have the history with the movie. I wouldn't have been able to tell you any like pop culture references to the movie even.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I want to know what you had for most iconic scene.
Look, same for me because again, I you know, didn't get to experience it, I guess, the way other people did at the time. But I thought that it would have to be Gareth's death. Like that scene where he has the heart attack, because it's in the title, basically, that there's going to be a death. And that foreshadowing is there for the whole film of like, well, who's it going to be? Like, well, what's this funeral if we're just going to keep bouncing between weddings? So that's what I had. Although I do think the most 90s scene would be the kiss at the end in the rain.
Oh my gosh. You know, yeah.
Yeah. So
I did have that written down under one of these categories.
Yeah. Okay. What did you get, mate?
I wrote down the Rowan Atkinson as the bishop scene where he's just like bumbling over all the vows and stuff. I just thought like it was funny. Like it was an easy laugh to just have the bishop there who can't get anything right, but it made me laugh. I thought that it would probably be one of the more like quotable kind of scenes, maybe. I don't know. What did you think of that part?
Yeah, good. Yeah, I mean it's great. It's hard to get through. More, because that's kind of the last time you see him as well, right? He's not there for anything after that.
No, he gets introduced at the first wedding. And he's kind of like the apprentice or whatever, I guess you'd call the equivalent in the cloth. But he gets the gig for the second wedding and it might be his last one.
yeah, maybe. It doesn't seem like he enjoyed it too much. I can't think of too many other things. There's a lot of little things I think of, which... crack me up, but that's not in terms of being like super iconic.
Yeah, and I think that's where I was saying at the start, like everything in this movie, like there's just funny moments regularly. There's no like slapstick, like someone gets lit on fire and jumps out a window or that kind of comedy, because and that means that there's not really these scenes that stand out in your mind too much. I did like the first wedding and just the part after the ceremony where he's getting around and talking to everyone and sticking his foot in his mouth and having some like just really funny interactions with people, like when he reveals to that guy that his wife had been like cheating on him. Yeah. And then he has the really bizarre interaction at the reception where he's like, "Oh, I'm Charles," and the guy's like,
"Yeah,
Charles been dead for 20 years." Like, yeah. It's just like so many, and then he does like the best man speech, which is pretty funny too. So I think that first wedding as like a really long sequence is really one of the better like things, and I think that it sets the stage for who Hugh Grant would be for the next 15, 20 years in some ways.
You're right. Yeah, I had that down here too. Just all those like sort of little bit characters throughout the film. Like you're constantly just being introduced to people who have like one scene and it's really short and it's hilarious. And then that's it. Like again, like the guy who's trying to keep Charles there for drinks, right? Like that guy has like one scene. He's trying to get on with Carrie. Yeah. And then he's like trying to keep Hugh there for the whole night. He's like, "Let's drink till 6 a.m. And then you never see him.
He's got the bottle.
Yeah. He's got the bottle, that's it.
Yeah. And then the other scene that I thought was great was with all the exes. And you mentioned that already, like being sat at that table. Yeah.
And they're all talking about each other without realizing.
Yeah.
So funny. that's tough look for Charles.
All right, what holds up the best?
I think this film holds up really well, by the way. Like I think for the reasons I've already said, like I think that it's only isolated to really like five or six small scenes, and again, you're spending time in these beautiful old English and Scottish buildings, and they would be exactly as they are today, as they were at the time of filming. And I think for that reason, it works super, super well, and it holds up so well. What odds are the best? I don't know, mate. I can't like nail it down to one thing, I guess. Like, what did you have for this?
The comedy holds up really well, obviously. We've said a lot about that already. I thought the button-up shirt that Hugh Grant wears at that mall shopping date.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that look was like a classic look, and that's probably come back in fashion. Like, I reckon if you went down into Melbourne, like down the South Bank or something, you'd see a few bros like getting around with top button undone, floppy hairdo,
shorts,
kind of like
shorts and loafers.
It's aged,
for sure.
Yeah, it's aged really well, and like it's come around in that sense.
The
glasses
agree.
Too.
Yeah,
The specs. No, yeah,
It's just a good look. Just a brisk summer's day in London, 16 degrees Celsius.
Yeah. The other thing I had, and I don't really know if it definitely belongs here, depending on your perspective, but the climax of the movie that you mentioned, like kissing in the rain, the confession in the rain, where she comes back to him and she confesses her love and all that kind of thing. Does it hold up the best or the worst? I don't know, because it's super cheesy and corny and like, ugh, like this is so typical Hollywood crap. But then part of me is like, is this the first time it happened? Like, is this the movie that everyone else copied? And in that sense, does it hold up really well? Or
no.
Was it just one of many that had already done it before?
It doesn't hold up well. So that's actually, if we're talking about things that don't hold up well, what holds up the worst?
Let's segue. Yeah, let's go right into what holds up the worst then and talk about the kiss in the rain.
The kiss in the rain I don't have too much of an issue with. I think I love you at the shops, and then I think I've said this on this podcast before. My biggest problem with films, romantic comedies, is that they just find their way into like these really weird situations where confessions of love and blah, blah, blah. Like, I feel like that shit programmed me to think that this is how it worked. And so I blame these films for like so many embarrassing moments in my life.
Is a common theme of you on this podcast. Oh, like we talked about this in The Nutty Professor.
I think we did too.
You're all messed up from these 90s comedy rom-coms, man.
Dude, I like...
They've ruined your love life.
I failed so miserably, I think, in my like teenage years and early 20s probably as well, because of all of these bad habits I picked up from 90s rom-coms and noughties rom-coms. I had to like rewire my brain. I hate this shit. Every time I see it in films, I'm like, this is not how it works. It's bad. It really is like, and this is so ham-fisted as well. Like in the declarations in later rom-coms, like if you think about Love Actually and you think about like the card scene.
Yeah.
That's really sweet.
That would not work out in life.
No, that's right. It's stupid. And there's 20 years probably between, you know, the guy from The Walking Dead and Keira Knightley in that particular moment. But yeah, it's like it's a lot smarter, I think, than just a verbal declaration quoting Bruce Partridge or whatever his name is, Partridge from the Partridge Family. I think I love you.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you have?
Okay. Now I hear you. I've definitely felt that sting as well. You know, it's tough to rewire our brains for reality after watching all these movies and TV shows.
It's just filled with false confidence. False promises, mate. All of it.
Yeah. So what holds up the worst? I want to talk about Andy McDowell here. Yeah. I don't know what the 90s were like for young men or for men at all, I guess. Like, was Andy McDowell the hotness at the time? Because I just look at her in this movie, and this isn't just about her physical appearance, even though I'm personally like don't find her attractive as the leading lady, but just her whole character and personality turns me off. I just don't see the allure of her. I don't see why Hugh Grant's character is so in love with her and so infatuated with her. And she's just kind of mean to him. Like, she lies, she's not upfront about who she is or her intentions. And then she like kind of messes with him and says like, does this mean that we're getting engaged? And presumably at this point, she's already engaged to this rich Scottish guy, or she's about to be. She's been in a relationship with him for a long time. So she's cheated on him with Charles. And then the next time she sees him.
No, that's incorrect.
No?
No, she meets him after she meets Charles.
Okay, I missed that.
Yeah, because...
Okay,
and I'll touch on how I know that in a moment, because I think the way that that's uncovered is baffling as well. But anyway, go on.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, I'll give her a pass for that first one then. But after that, you know, she talks about, like, she shows up with her fiancé, and obviously Charles is, you know, what's the word? Like, awestruck. He's like a deer in headlights when he sees her with him. And she doesn't, like, take him aside and say, hey, look, you know, I understand this has happened really quick and we had something and I'm really sorry about the way it's worked out. None of that conversation happens. It's just like, hey, this is my fiancé, deal with it.
But you're not wrong, right? Like, everything you've said is pretty... And it's not Andy McDowell. It's the script, because the film is right. Sort of... It's weird because the film... I'm not going to say it's like trying to get you to dislike her, but I think it's trying to create tension where normally there just wouldn't be tension with two people who like each other. But the film, whether it's trying to or not, it is, at least up until I'd say the shopping scene, like, you sort of are actively being given hints that she's not a good person. Like, if she wants to cheat, like, whatever, I'm all about her agency. That's great. But it's like, I think in the second wedding, she seems not super interested in Charles until right at the end of the night when she goes home with him. You know, she's at a relationship at that point and she does sleep with him again. So she's cheating. Mm-hmm. And then you do meet this guy. And even though you don't really spend time with him, whatever his name is, Hamish, I think his name is, the Scottish bloke. You know he's old and you know he's rich, and there's really no other reason you can see that she might go there. I know that sounds really shallow, but Fiona gives you that hint at the start. She's like, oh, she's a slut and just bounces around rich dudes. Like,
yeah.
You're being given all of this information and it paints this picture, which again makes it really hard to kind of get on board with the idea that he's in love with her. And I have a big problem with this too. I thought this didn't really work. The reason I know that he happened before Hamish is because in the cafe scene where she's running through her list of partners, I was blown away.
Yeah, you're right.
I was blown away by how she could remember them in order and so vividly. Even forget how many there are, whatever. It's like the fact that she can lay them out chronologically, I was just like, this is bullshit, but if anyone can actually do this, I'm thoroughly impressed. Well impressed.
Oh, we won't go there, Dream.
All right.
I won't ask. There's just all these things that happen with her that just make me question, like, her moral judgment and, you know, her moral fiber, I guess. I'm not drawn to her. I don't empathize with her. I can't, you know, I'm not fond of her as a character. And watching Charles fawn over her is really, like, that was something that didn't work really for me. I think the way, you know, it kind of comes around. If it was an actress, like, in the modern day, like, you know, a total bombshell, like someone, I'm having a mind blank, Margot Robbie or someone.
Sure.
Who's this, like, exotic, foreign, like, from another country, like, gorgeous, like, you just can't take your eyes off them kind of person, then I would understand more of the, like, overlooking their faults because they're just so in, like, he'd be in, like, this deep lust for her as well. But I just don't find Andy McDowell that type of actor in this movie.
No.
Maybe it's a 90s thing, but what do you think?
No, I think, look, I agree. I think it's probably a combination of, again, you only have sort of fleeting moments with these characters across 2 years where you really start to see whatever they show you, I guess. But did they only have
fleeting moments together as well? Like, he didn't, like, in Groundhog Day, Bill Murray had possibly hundreds of years to fall in love with this woman and limited options to choose from. But, so it makes a bit more sense. And, like, let's say this, Hugh Grant is, like, 1,000 times better looking than Bill Murray.
Yeah, but you see him... Oh, we could get stuck talking about it. Like, you see him work the game of Groundhog Day, though, to his favor. It's like he knows how to win her over, basically, because he's failed time and time again and just resets. But you do see her character so much more there than here. I think here it's a combination of, like, the limited time you get with her, you don't really see anything from her perspective too much either. It's always Hugh Grant's perspective, and you're sort of blindsided by what's going on with Carrie. What's the latest development? She's engaged, she's married, she's not married, all that stuff. Then also, I think maybe she was directed to be a little bit more passive, and because she is very one-tone sort of throughout the film, where she's just always so... She has moments where she could have been funny, like the after the bed, like the first time they sleep with each other, she could be cheeky and playful, and she is cheeky and playful, and you kind of learn that, but you don't see that. So I just think it's probably a combination of those three things. I think she's great. I think she's really attractive. Again, Groundhog Day, she's a great love interest in that, but
I think so too.
I think this just falls flat a little bit. Like Fiona has more energy and chemistry, I think, with Hugh Grant than Carrie.
Andy McDowell. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And I think she's also been voted, I don't know by who, but I just read this, like one of the most annoying characters in British cinema by some like big poll. So I think there's a lot of people that aren't like a huge fan of Carrie. The character. It's probably not Andy McDowell's fault. I'm not saying she's a bad actor, but there's something about either the casting or the way the character was written. It just didn't translate for me. But you know, I will say this: the way that Hugh Grant, the way that Charles gets engaged to Hen, and then dumps her, you know, at the altar. By the end of the movie, I was thinking, okay, now these two characters can be together because they deserve each other because they're both terrible people.
That's fair. I think that's so.
You know what I mean?
Like for me,
like they're both ruining people's lives and like playing with people's emotions.
You don't really ever like Henrietta, I think, as a character, because she just comes across as so like cringeworthy to sort of be around and be in a relationship with. But you do definitely feel sorry for her. And I was very happy to see her wedding photos first in that last montage at the end there.
That was a good bit of closure. Who would be the most offended by this movie now? I couldn't think of anyone. I think it's a pretty, you know, it's pretty inoffensive film.
I agree. I literally had Americans. that's all I could think of. Americans who are just too patriotic, and women who have been left at the altar. Men who have been left at the altar as well, I guess.
Yeah, that would be a pretty big trigger for some people, I imagine. But so they get a tick for that as far as how it holds up today. Does Four Weddings and a Funeral pass the internet relevancy test? I'm going to say no, given that nothing has permeated into my sphere of pop culture references from this movie. There's nothing that anyone could say as a reference to this that I would understand. Even the way that I might for movies I haven't seen that are bigger. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I'll go a step further. I could see a GIF or something from this film and I wouldn't know that it's from this film. I would just be like, oh, it's a Hugh Grant meme. But he himself has been quite relevant on sort of the internet relevancy of, you know, like I feel like there's a Hugh Grant character, I guess, that we all sort of imagine when we think of him, that is an archetype of, or like an exaggeration of who he is, obviously, that we just, I don't know. I feel like that's been sort of tossed around the internet, not so much recently, but like that's the only thing I can think of, and I think that's a bit of a stretch.
Let's
just say no.
As far as this category, like something like Love Actually is going to be way higher. Something like even Mickey Blue Eyes or something, like I would think of that before I think of the moments and the expressions that come up in this movie. How would smartphones and social media change Four Weddings and a Funeral?
I think like most films of this era, it breaks the film entirely. I can't think of any like crush I've had in the last decade where I didn't immediately like look for them on Facebook, Insta, Snapchat, whatever, like just try and find them and then low-key stalk them. I think we all do this in the single world in the in the teens. And yeah, I think that for sure after that first meeting, he would have, yeah, hooked her up, like looked her up, called her, messaged her, message between then and the next wedding. And then, I don't know, probably gotten over each other and moved on.
Yeah, I think it, like you said, that it, like smartphones and social media would change all movies. There's been quite a few that we've done on this podcast where it really hasn't changed much at all. But I think more than anything else we've talked about, this would probably throw the whole thing out. They would obviously stay in touch, like you said. They would be DMing and texting. And I think their relationship after that first wedding would progress to the point where maybe she doesn't get with the rich guy, unless she really was super motivated by the money. I think they would have, maybe they would have had an affair going constantly. He would have known she was going to be at that second wedding. He would have known that from being Facebook friends or from following her on Instagram or whatever.
Mm.
And then I think finally the last wedding where, you know, he's engaged to Henrietta, shows up on the wedding day. And he finds out that Carrie is divorced already. And it throws him off. It's kind of the climax of the movie. And that wouldn't happen because he would have known about it months before the wedding. And he would have been able to avoid that scenario completely. So I think, yeah, it would be a very different movie. And I think that would make it challenging to make it today, which is our next question. What would the 2020 version of this look like, Dream? And could you still make it?
I think you absolutely could. I do. Like, even in spite of what we both just said about phones, I feel like you could write around that pretty easily.
Yeah.
I would like to see... actually, I just realized that my two recommendations for the male lead are both Harry Potter actors. I may or may not have recently re-read through audiobooks the whole series and then also watched a lot of films. Eddie Redmayne, who's the guy from the Fantastic Beasts, he plays like a really timid sort of character in that, and Newt Scamander. And I think he's a handsome bloke. I think he'd do a very fitting job of playing Charles. I think Rupert Grint as well is also kind of like this good combination of just sort of like there's a naivety and sort of an ignorance, and then also just, you know, humor, like just so funny. I've got nothing for the female leads because I didn't really spend too much time looking at American actresses if we're going to do a strictly American person. But I liked your suggestion of Margot Robbie earlier. I think that's that's pretty good, and God knows there's a bunch of
Jennifer Lawrence. I think Jennifer Lawrence would work in that type of role.
J-Law
as well.
Yeah,
even like you know, Emma, what's her name? Emma Stone.
God, I thought you were gonna say Emma Watson because that was one of mine. I'm like, nah, it's too on the nose for Harry Potter.
Yeah, she could play one of the, she could play Fiona or something.
Yeah, it would be a good Fiona. I don't know. I really liked Fiona in this. The actress's name is Kristin Scott Thomas, and she's fantastic. And also, did she marry? Does it suggest that she married Prince Charles at the end there? Is that the suggestion?
That's the suggestion, correct, yes.
That's...
which is very strange, like, considering he was married. Wasn't he married to Lady Di at this point?
I think Lady Di... I'm going to Google this because I think this is a pretty good point. If Lady Di... I think Lady Di passed the same year.
No, she died in 97.
97. Oh, okay. All right. I got that 3
3 years later.
I thought it was 96.
Maybe... Okay. No, maybe they were divorced. Sorry, you're right. Maybe they had been divorced by then. Hold on, I'm Googling.
No,
they
no,
separated in 92 and their marriage ended in divorce in 96.
Ah.
So.
Oh, I see. Okay, so that's what it is. All right, well, that's good. Yeah. That's in better taste.
Slightly. Slightly. It's still very strange.
It is, yeah. I thought it was... Well, she's, you know, also part of the seventh richest family in all of the UK or whatever it is. So, she gets to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree. I think you could make it today. I think it would be quite fun. And surprisingly, did you know that there is a Four Weddings and a Funeral web series?
No. What?
Yeah.
Is this just like a fan made, like someone's just writing some fanfic? Can I go back a step? Was Prince Charles sexy ever? Like,
no, definitely not.
Who thought that would be a good idea?
That's a ludicrous question.
So what's she doing? She's just marrying rich.
Yeah, definitely.
Guess she goes to be a lady.
The Four Weddings and a Funeral, the web miniseries. It's written again by Richard Curtis. It premiered last year on Hulu, and it was created by Mindy Kaling and Matt Warburton. So, you know, there's some big heavy hitters behind it. It's just that it's stuck on Hulu, which is why we wouldn't have come across it on Australian shores.
Yeah, that's the death sentence for international releases out of America, really, isn't it?
Some of it makes its way to Stan and that kind of thing, but anyway.
Cool, well, I'll download that illegally later.
Yeah. I've got some useless trivia for you here I want you to react to. So Andie MacDowell waived a fee for appearing in this movie. She took percentage points instead, which netted her an eventual $2 million compared with Hugh Grant's salary of $100,000.
That's some like George Lucas level foresight to be able to just be like, you know what? I'll take the points and I'm just going to roll the dice and see how much this makes. That's, man, good on her. Well done.
Yeah. Genius. Probably set her up. That's why we don't see her in anything anymore, because she made all of her money in the 90s.
Wouldn't it be like hilarious if this was just meant to be like, you know how actors will do like one big Hollywood thing and then like a small indie production or something? Like, wouldn't this be funny if this was the small indie production? It was just another home run.
Yeah. So I recognize this car. It says here in my research, the Mini used in this movie was the same Mini with the same registration as the one that Mr. Bean used on his TV show, Back to School, Mr. Bean.
No.
Different paint scheme. Did you see the Mini? Did it cross your mind?
No, it didn't at all. It didn't at all. That's... Really?
It's weird. It's a weird fact, but it's there on the internet, so it has to be true.
Is it like Rowan Atkinson's car and they just needed it? Like he took it from both productions? It
would be wild. That would be wild if true. I mean, Richard Curtis, who wrote this movie, as I've mentioned, he wrote a lot of Mr. Bean episodes. So I wouldn't be shocked if they used like the same, you know, studio departments, props, whatever. It
could just be his car.
It works. It's time now for the Steve Buscemi Spark Plug Award.
Steve Buscemi.
A real spark plug.
And I don't really know where to go with this. You mentioned there's a lot of characters that pop up for like one line here and there, and they're great, but no one that I'm really thinking is deserving of such prestige as the Steve Buscemi Spark Plug Award. So I kind of want to give it to Simon Callow, who plays Gareth. I feel like he has a lot of good moments. Whenever he gets to deliver a few lines, it's usually pretty funny. And I don't know, maybe I felt bad for him for dying, but did you have any suggestions about who would be a rightful winner of this award?
No, you know what? We haven't really talked about Gareth too much aside from him dying. And yeah, I think he's Simon Callow in this film is just, he's just so over the top energetic and definitely one of the, like in a cast where there's great characters, he's a fantastic character. Yeah, why not? I'll go there. I'll go there with you, mate. I'll back you on that.
All right. Congratulations, Simon. You've done it.
You've made
it. Last question. Is Four Weddings and a Funeral still a good movie? I think the fact that we've both seen it for the first time in our adulthood, and we've both been talking glowingly about the comedy and how it holds up, I think we both agree. Great movie. Mm-hmm. Still really good. Not perfect, but I enjoyed it. And I would watch it again in another 10 years, probably.
I will be revisiting it sooner than that. I love this film. Big recommend from me, 100%. It's just so... I don't know. Once you can get past sort of the weird stuff with Andy McDowell that sort of sprinkled throughout the film, it's so easy to just take in. It's so fun.
I think we've said enough about how clever it is and everything. It's. I wonder where it ranks amongst Richard Curtis's movies we mentioned before, you know, the Notting Hill and the Love Actuallys and whatnot. But I don't know. I think it's a pretty good start to a good run for him and Hugh Grant anyway.
Big agree. I didn't realize it was their first. I didn't realize it was even a partnership. I need to do my research a bit better next time. But I definitely want to watch more Hugh Grant films now, just to like really, I feel like they're all the same world, you know? So
yeah.
And I want to spend more time with like quirky characters like this. So maybe that's what I'll do after this.
Do it. All right, Dream. What's going on? Is there anything you're working on? Anything in the pipeline? Give me the scoop as far as content creation goes. I know you're very busy with the studies and whatnot, but is there a plan to return to 8-bit content more regularly in the distant future?
No, there's all the aspirations in the world to do it, and I think it's stay tuned at the moment. It's a watch this space. Mm-hmm. I'll certainly come back if we do decide to do Notting Hill. I'll come back for Notting Hill. Okay. All right.
Yeah, that sounds good. Let's make a date, a rom-com date. So
let's see how many Hugh Grant films I can get you to watch. Like, let's see how happy we can make Hannah. Hopefully, with Hugh Grant films.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I love Mickey Blue Eyes. It's not one of the British movies. It's an American movie. But yeah, I love that movie. It's not 90s, so we can't do it, but maybe eventually. Anyway, for now, dear listeners, you can help out this podcast by leaving us some nice reviews in the Apple Podcasts or Podchaser or wherever you get your podcasts. 5 stars or nothing, as we say. And if you really want to support 8-bit and all the work we're doing, you can get into the Patreon at patreon.com/weare8bit. That's A-T-E-B-I-T. And yeah, that's where you can chip in a few dollars a month to help keep the emotional lights on, as our fearless leader likes to say. Dream, where can people find you on social media? Thank you for coming back into our lives via audio podcast.
You can send your thanks or your complaints to @SalimTD, and I'll respond to all of them directly.
Oh, I hope you do. And you can catch me, of course, @Jonah himself. And thank you again, dear listeners, for joining us on Comedy Rewind. Be kind.